let's let's play DJ in the champagne room.
Sounds like fun. Sounds
like a fucking plan. Greetings, I'm your host, Jason Miles, and welcome to another episode of This is Revolution Podcast. So glad to have you guys with us live. And of course, happy to have the people that will be checking this out later on audio-only formats. Before we start, if you're new to the channel, please hit that like button, hit subscribe, and the bell so you're notified whenever we go live. We're constantly adding new shows and doing cross streams with other channels. Earlier this week, we had a great talk with author and Professor Colin B. Anthus about the situation in Canada and the potential right-wing shift of what's known as a pretty moderate country. Colin was extremely thorough in his analysis, so please go check that out. Also, this Saturday, we'll be in the Catrone Zone. We'll be discussing Chris Catrone's latest book out on Sublation called The Death of the Millennial Left. I'm sure that will be very, very interesting episode where you guys will have a lot to say to the always controversial Chris Catrone. As always, thank you to all the subscribers on YouTube and Twitch and all the audio-only podcast formats you find us on. Also, thanks to our patrons. Collectively, you are all the fuel in the engine that keeps TIR moving along. So if you're enjoying what we do here and you want access to the post-show champagne room, our call-in segments in the champagne room, if you want to be part of the live audience for the Mau Mau Hour with Pascal Robert, if you want to join us for movie night, there's only one way. Become a patron for as little as $3 a month or $30 for the year. It can all be yours. That being said, let me bring in the crew. First and foremost, my homie, my dog, my co-host, the man of the Mau Mau Hour. Is he rocking the parasol today in Florida? The Pascal Robert.
Really, parasol? Peace and greetings to the audience. Peace and greetings to the chat. Peace and greetings, Jason Miles. No parasol and mint julep today, buddy.
Are you sure?
No.
I mean, in our minds, we want to believe that you're just kind of gallivanting along the Miami coastline saying, I declare. No?
Well, foghorn leghorn over here?
Less foghorn leghorn and more southern gentleman.
Up in the Northeast, man.
Speaking of faceless voices of reason, please welcome MT Sun.
Hello, hello. Gang, gang.
MT Sun.
Are you going to talk like those people that we've been watching those videos on TikTok?
What's hood? What's hood? What's good?
No, the ones where they do the sound effects.
What sound effects?
Those people, you never follow us, the chat conversations and the group chat that we have.
I mean, sometimes you guys are getting abstract and historical, and I don't feel like being taxed in that way. And sometimes you guys are just being dudes.
It is mostly dude stuff.
You can't believe it.
Mostly dude stuff. I would say of late, it has been less historical materialism and more, would you believe this shit? Old dude stuff.
Wu-Tang's for the children.
Well, speaking of Wu-Tang being for the children, in our group chat, shout out to Gene Bajlan for putting bread in the thumbnail.
Yeah, what was that, for bread tube?
For bread tube.
Yeah. Where did that term come from?
It comes from the Kropotkin book, Conquest of Bread. They needed a name for a lefty.
With the literary reference.
I be knowing stuff sometimes. Yeah.
As we begin the show today, first off, we here at TR would like to acknowledge that it's been 3 years today since the passing of left commentator Michael Brooks. People here in the TIR family have tight ties to Mr. Brooks, and of course, all of us appreciated the work that he was able to accomplish in such a short time. And I sometimes wonder what this current state of left media would look like if he's still been around. Sadly, we'll never know. But today I want to discuss a bit about a term that is thrown around too often, so much so that the word has literally lost its meaning, and that is grifter. Grifter is defined in Webster's as a person who engages in petty or small-scale swindling. For me, that is a far cry from the way it is used now, which is more like a person who no longer says what I feel is within my definition of leftist orthodoxy, and I think they are receiving money for this charade, therefore they are communists. For me, the latter is a far cry from the former, but for many, it's the same difference. All right, fellas, let's discuss.
My first question I wanted to ask you is, what's been motivating you to go down this rabbit hole of investigation of the nature of left media? I mean, it's obvious that we are left media content creators. Is it a frustration with the enterprise in and of itself? Do you find that there's something that we are failing to disclose about what we see in this world? I mean, I can definitely tell you there are, I think that the expectations of the audiences and the reality of what the content creators can produce is the biggest gap I see in reality for me.
What do you mean as far as what the content creator can produce?
You know, I just think that the expectation that you have people who are sitting at home on their YouTube streams to are trying to produce some kind of news content, that they're going to be 24/7 like stomping the barricades ready for revolution. It's kind of ridiculous.
You know, the original title, I forget actually what the original title for that piece was. That was actually something that I wrote a little over a year ago. And I reworked a lot of it, and not a lot of it, I reworked some of it, and we republished it in Sublation because I thought it was, you know, pretty relevant to some things that I saw going on. What kind of motivated me to revisit that was that, first of all, we had gotten tagged on something. Another piece I wrote that had nothing to do with anything. Ben Burgess had shared it because he actually helped me edit it. Somebody made some insults to him, but I was tagged on it and I saw it. And it was just kind of this ridiculous thing I was looking at. And it just made me think that feeling the way people digest media, kind of like the reason why I made Kayfabe, was the way we digest media is in such a way that nuance is gone and it's all about real, overly simplistic binary narratives. And to your point about the kind of storming of the barricade style of, I don't want to say journalism, but edutainment, if you will, I think it all comes out of people chasing a market share more than I think it's people being dishonest. I did actually, when I wrote the piece, I did watch the film The Grifters. I quote the grifters in the original piece. I think I was able to quote it in the redo on Sublation. But and I watched that movie last night, actually, with a friend that had never seen it, and she was, you know, she had never seen it, and it's an older film. It's from like what, 92, 93, and she was aghast at that movie because the characters in it are so despicable. And they all live very, very solitary lives, because the life of a con artist is a very lonely one. And I don't think even commentators who I'm not a fan of at all, I think a lot of the stuff they say is trash. I don't think they're con artists. You know what I mean? I just think they're all chasing a very, very, very small market. You know, when you look at some of these videos that we joke about in the champagne room, you know, these people that post videos like that have millions of followers. Like I showed you that one guy that does the kind of fake things where he agitates black people in the inner city. That guy has four YouTube channels with over a million followers each. Grasping a much larger audience, and you look at, you know, the larger channels in our world, it's like Majority Report and Jimmy Dore, you know, and those are super, super small compared to kind of the greater scale of media, and everyone is trying to take eyeballs away from this super small audience. So, you know, I guess be more radical might be their ethos and what they're doing. But what we find is that when you engage in name calling, views go up. Because this is still reality TV for a lot of people. A lot of people don't want to admit that. So when the name calling happens about other shows, you know, you don't need to do any research for that. You don't need to do any creative production work for that. You just, you know, call somebody a name and then kind of move out the way and let it do its work.
Well, you know what's really interesting also is I think that a lot of what we're seeing in the way people react to online media is a consequence of the frustration that people have with mainstream media, mm-hmm. and that mainstream media is so unable to reflect the political wherewithal or wishes of what the body politic is interested in seeing, because it's largely about representing the interests of capital. That's just the nature of which the way in which corporate media works. Mm-hmm. So that when people find online media that is supposedly more independent of those forces, they become overly emotional in their attachment. And I think they become a little bit more divorced from the realities of the expectation, and they become more personalized in terms of how closer they become to this person who is basically just conveying them information, political education, or news. And I think it creates a certain kind of vicious cycle that makes it hard for people to realize, like, yo, listen, why are you getting so personally invested in someone who is just trying to give you a political education?
Well, I don't know. Well, before I answer, Tucson, do you have something you'd like to add to that?
No, I think I'll
take your answer off there.
I'll set up my question a bit later. I don't want to take you back.
The way I see it, and this is just my opinion, I was a fan for since a little child of sports talk radio, and it used to be insightful. And I hate to be that kind of in my day, things were better. I still think there's some insightful things in sports media, but there's kind of a Jim Rome, Howard Sternification of the way just media is produced in general. So people really have to be abrasive to get ears and eyeballs on what they're doing. So there's also like a real abrasive nature about the way people are approaching what they're doing. And I think that lends itself to the idea as well of so-and-so is a con man. And saying grifter starts to have its own little meaning. But when you say con man, it even sounds a little different. Because you're like, well, what is the con? That's my thing I always say is, well, what is the con and where is the financial payoff? I mean, we don't have to get into super duper raw numbers for this show, but it barely gets by. And Gene Bajelan always makes the jokes that no white person is paid on this show, and he's extremely right. They're not. Mainly because we can't afford it.
But isn't there money somewhere? White people are getting paid somewhere on the left.
The people, it's like anything else. The people that got in when everything blew up got paid, right? So 2016, 2015, if you got in during Sanders and Trump, you got paid. If you got in around COVID time, like this show really kind of becomes a bigger thing during the shelter in place, even though it was started beforehand. All jokes aside, maybe you're doing okay, but those people that got in early built kind of massive followings. You know, look at Chapo, for example. They get in early, and you're not going to see another one of those. I don't think. Do you guys disagree or disagree?
I don't think the politics of what is considered the left allows something like Chapo to happen again.
That moment has just passed.
The politics of that moment has passed.
Right.
Yeah. And, you know, getting to meet those guys actually and in person was actually kind of nice when I got to speak at UC Irvine a few months ago. And I think I actually said that at Irvine. I think I said that the moment for those guys has passed, and they kind of realize it, and they are all doing, you know, very, very different projects, and they're able to do more interesting things, I think.
Can I interrupt you?
Please.
We have a super chat from The Letter Hack. Mm-hmm. People don't want to eat their veggies. That is 100% a Gene Bajelan statement. But I also wanted to point out someone else's comment in the chat. Mm-hmm. We said that moment has gone. Defective Sony DVD says it'll come back around. What do you think of that?
Nope.
I disagree with that.
I think it's gone. I think that moment for someone to grab that level of attention, kind of, I don't want to say that quickly because it did take a little bit of time for those guys to build that stuff up. Sure, but yeah, it's just gone.
And I think that the failure of that particular moment to materialize into some real politics has made people profoundly cynical. I actually think that part of the problem we have with this moment is the massive cynicism that exists amongst people who were formerly on the left or progressives who were supporting that kind of Bernie Sanders politics, how they became so disenchanted with the fact that nothing materialized. And I think it bred a serious, serious cynicism.
Do you think that was the point?
I don't think that was the point. I think that was an unintended consequence.
You don't think that when the powers that be got together and made all those calls and stopped Bernie,
they're going to kill the podcast sphere.
Kill the podcast. Kill the millennial left. Ha ha ha. We finally got him.
Do I think the Democratic Party accidentally killed the millennial left? Yes.
Accidentally.
Yes. I definitely do. I think they thought it could be like Obama.
We'll just roll them in
like we did in 2008. And they'll be one of us. One of us.
So naive. One of us. Virtuoso says the thrill is gone, BB King. And Strom McCallum says rat beef, Gene Bajelan.
Well, Gene Bajelan makes a comment when we have our private conversations, and I'll say this out loud, and I'd love to hear what Pascal has to say. He's heard this before, but you know, me and Gene had kind of a long talk about the future of the show because financially, you know, sometimes times are tougher. This is almost one of those times. And he goes, People just want to hear you call somebody on Revolutionary Blackout the N-word. Mm-hmm. And it's like, yeah.
With the hard ER or the with the A?
Either way. People want to see shows engage. Like, we see it here in the chat sometimes. People want to start, you know, beef, engaging in other shows, which, you know, again, speaks to the sports talk nature of the way in which people engage with this type of media. And again, if you do a show called, you know, Scumbags of the Left, these people are grifters on the left, a lot of people are going to tune into that. When you do a show called The Right Wing Shift of Canadian Politics, no one's going to tune into that.
Well, one of the,
I'm going to tune into it. I don't see that.
Remember when we noticed the point? This was a specific inflection point for left media for me when I realized that content about content was content. Mm-hmm. That when I realized that people was were having discourse about the discourse, that was a serious inflection point for me. I was like, hold on, there are whole shows that are not about any content, but are talking about what other people are talking about in the media.
But think about that, Pascal. That's really easy to produce, first of all. And all you have to do is just talk out of your ass. You don't need to read anything. You don't need to prepare questions for a guest. You don't need to book anybody. The talk soup format for how people try to do this stuff. I mean, I get it to a certain extent. You know, I did music. Not everybody that picks up an instrument or a microphone does it because of the love of the art. A lot of people do it to get laid.
Yeah.
A lot of people do it to be cool. When Catherine Liu says, you know, she said it at that thing, podcasters are the new rock stars. Hell yeah. There's a lot of truth to that. Much like chefs were the new rock stars maybe like 10 years ago. And now it's people with their own show. All you need is a camera that looks at you, and you don't even need good lighting. And if you have an attitude, you can go. Everybody wants to be Morton Downey Jr. I think he's an important figure to study. You know, he comes out, and as you definitely know this, Pascal, because he exists on your coast and when you're still there. Teray even went to a Morton Downey Jr. live event. He's got a massively young audience. He's supremely conservative, and he's got a massively young audience. How is he able to do that? Outrage. 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 And spectacle. You knew if you tuned into Morton Downey, you were going to see the genuine article. You knew you were going to see outrage, and you were probably going to see a fight of some kind. But he did bring on a lot of people from what we would probably call the far left at the time. But back then, at best, they called them liberals. I mean, he had that guy that I can't stand. I know you know him. Who's the guy that started the Guardian Angels, Pascal?
Oh, Curtis Lewa.
Yeah, he would have that guy on all the time. All the time.
He ran for mayor in the last run in New York.
Ugh. Ugh. Now, go back and watch some of those shows. He was so far right. He would bring in Republicans that were far to his left. Or libertarians, even. Do you remember when he brought in Ron Paul on the show? And Ron Paul was so far to his left, they thought Ron Paul was like a Yahoo.
They thought he was Dennis Kucinich. That is such a political, like, that is such a,
yeah, joke. An insider.
Like, very insider. Can I just add, we have a comment from a super chat from Armando Solorzano. I watch for the commitment to historical materialist analysis. Prefer it to reality TV. Valid.
watch this show or just in general?
I'm guessing it's this show.
Oh, I hope so. We try to stay away from the reality TV stuff. I mean,
we do.
Again, I don't know if you guys ever hung around con men or people that have to get along, just they get around by always like hustling for a couple bucks. Like, this ain't it. This ain't the couple buck hustle. Please read this comment by Vince Sullivan, who is watching via Facebook. By the way, because I am old, we do this show on Facebook as well.
There's nothing wrong with that. Vince Sullivan says, "You have changed my perspective a lot, like Michael Brooks, but in profound, in different ways." Thank you, Pascal.
Oh, wow. Thank you so much. Damn.
Brother Vince, thank you so much for the kind words. I really appreciate that.
Vince says, but I'm the only guy here, which is profoundly alienating. Share the show, Vince, with all of your friends.
There's another guy
like
there.
Joe Rogan. If you have any friends that like Joe Rogan, like there's these black guys and they're just like Joe Rogan. Just say that. No one's going to know the difference.
We had a comment earlier from Zach Schwenk. If podcasters are the new rock stars, is he the new groupie?
You know, my saying is that that shit died in the 90s in general. There are no groupies. I don't think anybody's. As someone that's done a few of these live shows, you've been at the live show, Toussaint. You can answer that question.
I didn't see any groupies there, to be honest. A couple of people got free drinks, but that was it.
You got a free drink?
I got a free drink. Kuba's a very generous man. So is Andy Williams. Very nice.
If Kuba buys you a drink, that's not, he's not a groupie. He's part of the show.
Kuba's not a groupie.
No.
No. Andy Williams part of the crew now.
I got Andy Williams a seat at the live show in New York.
He's carrying guitars.
You know what's funny? Me and a friend, I'll try to bring this all together as far as that. A friend of mine, actually my guitar player, Todd, we were talking about a group like Metallica, who, when you think about their rise to stardom, and even other groups like De La Soul, for example, it didn't take them very long to reach a certain plateau of success and then kind of just stay there. You know, Metallica, within 4 years of their career, they're playing arenas. And not a lot of people can say that, especially without major label success. They didn't tour very long in vans, if at all. A lot of those bands didn't even tour in vans. They kind of got record deals and got in buses. And then started going all over the world. They walked in the door with people that wanted to help. So they kind of walked in the door with guys that wanted to tune guitars and carry gear, people that wanted to manage them. Even the old 80s hardcore punk bands like the Germs and stuff like that, all those guys had managers, people really wanting to help out. That stopped existing for a lot of people in the latter end of the 90s and the 2000s, that level of support. And by the time you get into the era of like YouTube and easy home recording, all that stuff is gone because you're kind of in the age of the doer. You know, I don't need to help my friend succeed or help a band I like succeed to get to the next level. I can do it myself. And this world is a lot like that, in my opinion. Unless you disagree.
It's interesting, man. I think there's some truth to that. I mean, everything has changed so much since the 2008 crash, right? In terms of the shifting of the shape of the way people view, you know, their enterprises online and otherwise. I think it's definitely become much more isolating in terms of trying to start these kind of endeavors, even though we do, you know, have a certain type of community of commentators. But
COVID changed things too.
Mm. COVID changed. That's a good point. Mm. Good point. COVID changed things a lot. Even though people are trying to deny how much.
I mean, there's an interesting network that I think we're able to build here where we get a lot of messages, especially through like Patreon. We get like a lot of really nice, helpful messages of people just trying to help. There's been people that have like sent toys and stuff, which is kind of neat. It's just not to the level that it was in the past when it comes to like people really supporting and trying to push something up to a certain plateau. And I don't know if that's because more, you know, once you get there, people want to tear you down. I don't know, because I don't necessarily believe it's just that simple. You get success, then people tear you down. I think there's a lot more involved in that. But it's just too easy to, I mean, we have people that we know in this universe, we won't name names, that have helped people get on, so to speak. And those people that they've gotten on and helped get their platforms bigger, those people have come back and then attacked them because they want that market share. I don't think that's grifting as much as like, this is the way I'm going to get this market share. I'm going to attack you, make you look bad, then I'll take your fan base. And these viewerships, I don't want to call them fan bases, they're viewerships, and they're really fickle. Because you're talking about something that a lot of people see as the way they see themselves. And that's the big difference between this and sports. People can get mad about their team and call people all kinds of names and this, that, and the other, but it's a little different when, you know, your the brand identity of you is, I'm a leftist or a socialist or a communist, and someone says the wrong thing, then you, you know, a lot of people just flip. I'm never going to watch that show again. Fuck those guys. I'm not going to support them. So, do you guys disagree?
I think that's a little, because we're dealing with a reality of a politics that's been so divorced from power for a long period of time. The my identity is my badge, is my ego type of worldview is a lot stronger. And as a result, if something is said that hurts someone's feelings, yeah, you might get, you might lose a viewer or two or five or whatever.
I mean, Ukraine for a lot of people broke people's brains.
Totally.
The fact that people felt that there was a way to feel and a way to think and a way to talk about that situation. And if you don't do it the right way, then you're a bad person, or you're a dishonest actor. Or my favorite is you're carrying water for party X. That's like my favorite thing when people say, like, well, what benefit would one have for quote unquote carrying water for party X?
Well, we also have the original brain breaker,
Donald Trump.
Force of
will. Oh.
That?
She said the original brain breaker forced the vote.
That was, it was really sad to see how that ended up fracturing. That was like the first major fracture of online left media, and it never recovered.
Never recovered. We lost Michael Brooks in that. Perhaps he would have had some sway in the things that he said. But it was just a very confusing time when people were very passionate about three letters and hashtag.
I brought that up in the piece just to bring it up as an example. And I think I bring up Jimmy Dore in the piece just to bring him up as an example, and not really an indictment on him as a person. I don't know him. I thought that whole thing, you know, personally, like, I don't really think it's going to do anything. But it really does speak to, again, the way we engage with this stuff. Like, when you listen to sports radio and there's a slow sports day, you know what the broadcasters do? They make up scenarios about trades. They make up rumors about trades. Right. So if it's a player your team likes, I'm from the Bay Area, so Steph Curry is a you know, icon in the Bay Area. He's a basketball player for the Golden State Warriors. So a slow sports day. Steph Curry, could he possibly be going with LeBron and the Lakers? Let's take your calls. You're going to get so many passionate responses from that. So many scenarios. The fact that video games have these functions where they have like franchise modes where, you know, you can make trades and you have to make them a certain way because there's a salary cap. People really do believe that they feel that they're owners of teams and they know how now owners think because they can operate in a franchise mode. And there's not much difference than that discourse and what we saw with that force the vote stuff. It was all taking place in the land of make-believe. Not one person had any power to do anything. And even if it would have happened, it wouldn't have done what people wanted it to do. And a lot of that also comes from that hope of 2016, the hero worship of that presidential election on both sides. That one person can fix all of your problems independently. And that's kind of where AOC comes from. When I talk about her, you know, kind of coming from the social media influencer end of things.
Another three letters.
Maybe it's the three. Maybe we need to change. Well, we are called TR. Maybe we need to do more branding.
Maybe okay, three names.
But when you think about her ascension in our minds, how many people donated to her campaign that didn't live in that district? I mean, I can tell you it was the majority of people that donated to that campaign didn't live in her district. She didn't get that many votes because she didn't need to get that many votes.
She caught fire also because of that documentary about her.
Oof.
Well, that she dominated the documentary.
Yeah. You want to read that?
My computer is super slow right now.
Uh-oh, I can read it. Strom McCallum, thank you for the super chat. But can we all have a laugh about, I'm reading this with Strom's voice in my head and I can see his grin as he's writing this. But can we all have a laugh about Dusty Baker's good old-fashioned race essentialism? Yes, we can. Dusty Baker, if you remember Pascal, is the former baseball player and former coach of my own San Francisco Giants that talked about black players being more acclimated to the heat because we come from Africa.
Nice.
Oh, so he was a science major.
He did speak fluent Spanish, so he could speak to with his Spanish players.
Oh, nice.
I miss Dusty Baker. He was good.
So do you say things like black players had higher vitamin C content because they like fruit?
Again, it's back to that whole like people losing their mind. Do you remember? I know you remember this, Pascal. If you say you don't remember this, I swear to God, you will make me walk to Florida. Remember Jimmy the Greek?
Oh, of course.
I knew it.
Walk to Florida, you said.
Because I knew he was going to remember this. Remember when Jimmy the Greek went off on that kind of drunken tirade?
Like, yeah,
well, the black players are better because they bred these big niggas.
Talking about slave breeding and how did they breed the big old bucks? That's why they run so fast and they dribble the ball so well.
Ruined his career. He was done after that.
He did.
You have another comment here. Is it showing up for you?
No.
Okay. Hello. It's a super chat from The Bridge. It says Bernie is an embodiment of a Greek hero.
Interesting.
People certainly put all their hopes onto that one man, and his poor little heart was like, I can't take all this, y'all. It's dangerous what you're doing.
Hearing the Chapo guys, I was with Matt Crispin and Amber Lee, and hearing them talk about Bernie Sanders and what he meant to them, I think we all agreed before Bernie Sanders, we were probably all very similar the way we saw it, we were similar in our cynicism with the way we saw the presidential elections and elections in general. And Bernie Sanders is a person that actually comes from years of operating outside of kind of Washington consensus. Always an independent. So when he caught fire like that, there was a feeling of hope. I won't speak for you and Pascal, but there was actually a legitimate feeling of hope for a minute that, you know, things could be different. Is that how you felt as well, Pascal?
I'm not gonna lie. I felt that Bernie Sanders was important symbolically and rhetorically because he was changing the nature of the conversation. I was never convinced by any stretch of the imagination that he had any chance of winning the primary at all. Because I understand that the Democratic primary selection process has a superdelegate system that's designed to make sure that someone like Bernie Sanders does not become the nominee. And I've never understood why people who are aware of that deny that reality when they talk about the process.
I used to work for the campaign. I bought flyers and brochures to give people for free.
Oh, like a Hare Krishna?
Yeah, I still have them. I'm going to have to make a little sad scrapbook of all of those marketing materials. I'm not quite ready to put away my Bernie shirt. It's a cool shirt.
Ben still wears his.
If Ben still wears his, I'm going to still wear mine.
He rocks his. You know, I got to know Shahid pretty well, Shahid Buttar, who ran against Nancy Pelosi. And I was always fascinated by the way that people love to talk about AOC and like what she was supposed to do. But I never felt like Shahid got the same kind of attention, especially locally, for the race he was running against maybe one of the most powerful people in Congress. It was definitely going to be a more uphill race because way more people vote in that district. But he had the viral video. Michael Brooks was in his video. Ben, actually, me, Brooks, and Burgess are all in Shahid's video. If you watch it, you can see me and my son, Michael Brooks and Ben, all in Shahid's video that he'd used for his campaign election the last time he ran, where things kind of blew up for him towards the end, which was kind of sad. But I think we're disconnected from our understanding of power.
Oh yeah.
You want to read this?
Yes. Mm-hmm. We have a super chat from JB.
Good JB.
When Bernie shocked the world in Iowa. I'm sorry, I can't read that.
When Bernie shocked the world in Iowa in 2016, that presented a legit ray of hope for people who had tuned out Obama. Nobody saw that coming. Can't be understated for its impact. Thank you, JB.
Thank you, JB and Jason.
Pascal, you want to add to that?
No, I mean, listen, man, I definitely understand the way in which people felt that in 2016, with the fear of the inevitability of Hillary Clinton, a lot of people don't realize how unpopular Hillary was in 2016, man, with what she represented with that neoliberal to traditional third way politics. And its inability to be killed in the electoral cycles. When Bernie came around, like people were like, "Yeah, this is the way to go." I feel that a lot of people on the left, who were to the left of Bernie, failed to use his moment to expand our politics, and sadly were more vested in making it seem like, well, Bernie's just a sheepdog, as opposed to saying, well, listen, this is what socialism means. And that was where I was at the time, because I was like, listen, why are we making Bernie Sanders a bigger enemy than Hillary Clinton? What is good about that for our politics? There's nothing that's good about that for our politics. For me, for me, it's more important to expand upon the optimism that this guy is bringing forth and the realization that he's opening people's minds on into and expose how that politics has been a part of American traditional politics for over a century.
There's an episode of The Simpsons where I don't remember the specifics, but like say Homer does something that made the family proud. And Bart and Lisa, for the first time, stretch out their necks and hold their heads up high. So I think that there was a, there was something of that with the Bernie Sanders campaign. Just being able to say the word socialist out loud was a lot.
Yes.
Integrate.
That changes a lot of things in a post-Cold War America, being able to say
it did.
Marxist. Being able to say those things and not be tarred and feathered.
Right.
Being able to kind of make friends around those things and not be tarred and feathered. That is a special moment, I think.
And it was
it lasted throughout this podcast.
Yeah. Yeah, they keep trying to call us black Marxists.
It lasted throughout this. I mean, it was a legitimate thing. I mean, I think, let me tell you something. I'm going to be let me keep it 100 with you. I think that the reason why I was not as transfixed on what Bernie represented is that I had already been where Bernie was for years before he got there. I didn't need Bernie Sanders to introduce me to left politics. I had been there since 2009, 2008.
There were like four of you, though.
Yeah, there were. There were basically.
So like you were the lefty of all lefties. Yeah, we get it. We got it. Yeah, we got it. Ooh. You were the most lefty.
I wouldn't say that I was the lefty of all lefties. Ooh. What I'm saying is that there were a lot of people who were transfixed with Obama who were saying, I'm a socialist now. I was like, yeah, you know, in 2012, we were telling you that this guy sucks. You were basically saying that, we were the enemy, I found it fascinating how all of a sudden they were like, those are the same people who were like, yeah, Bernie's the real deal now. I was like, his things weren't that great 4 years ago.
For people in the chat asking if we're Marxists, I think all of us on the show try not to yell out our political beliefs too much. Because we don't want to shut down conversation with anybody. So
we have a super chat from JB, who also does not want to shut down conversation. JB says the reality of Bernie hit hard in 2020. He could only get around 30% of the Dems' primary electorate.
2020 was rough.
JB still got his stats.
Now, this is what was sad about 2020. They structured the primary campaign to defeat Bernie Sanders in 2020.
Yes.
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 They structured the whole primary to defeat Sanders. Yes. That was sad, man.
Yes. That was insane to see that kind of murderer's row of buffoonery that were in those primaries in 2019.
And don't forget the COVID of it all. They're still telling people to go out and vote, killing poll workers and stuff.
The pandemic altered a lot of things. And I don't know if we can go back. And I think we still have to talk about the way the pandemic. I was actually reading something John Graham wrote, our friend John Graham. And I definitely want to do a show with him and Derek talking about kind of how the pandemic is treating higher ed, how there's kind of a rush to get people back into school and paying for school, but also what it did to high school students.
Right.
That are getting into higher ed, how people just aren't prepared intellectually for the rigors of higher education at any level.
And so they haven't been for a while. So this makes it worse.
So, I don't know if we even really know that narrative's not ready to be written yet about the pandemic because we're still really in it. We don't know. We're just now removing certain protections.
Right.
Like the eviction protection is finally gone in California. Not that people needed it, it's not to evict people, but it's finally gone.
Emergency food stamps. recently.
SNAP. I mean, I wrote a whole paper about the, you know, SNAP benefits going away. So again, the reason why I write this stuff is because I kind of want us to engage in politics in a more nuanced manner and not always reduce the conversation down to the simplicity of sports talk. You know, this guy sucks because he doesn't say the thing I like. You know, some people can just suck. Some people can just be stupid. They don't have to be con men. When you assume that everybody's a con man, that's on some tinfoil hat shit, in my opinion.
I have a question for you about that, but let me first get to this super chat. Well, this is from NF. Was Bernie's role to bring concrete nominal left into consciousness, or was it to mobilize people in the organizational sense? If it is also the latter, then does he still play a role today?
It's a very good question. I think it's the former, not the latter. I think he was trying to bring a concrete nominal left into consciousness. I don't think mobilizing people into organizational sense was something. I think that he had that potential, but I think that because of the reality of the fact that Trump posed such an oppositional threat to the democracy and the consciousness of many of the Democrats and liberals, he backed away from organizing. I fundamentally think that the best of what Sanders had to offer was neutralized by the Trump victory. In that what Bernie could have become afterwards could have been so much more potent, but it was neutralized by the fact that he did not want to be a spoiler for Trump.
Do you think he was in some sense vindicated by January 6th and these new charges about the documents and all of that sort of thing?
I don't think so.
No. Do you believe Trump was a unique threat? Was Bernie right, or was he too afraid?
I don't think that Trump was enough of a threat that we should stop organizing around or against the politics of the neoliberal center. I kind of agree with the fact that the neoliberals alone are not enough to bring the fight against the reactionary right. You gotta have a materialist politics.
Right. Well, let me get to my question for Mr. Miles. Do you believe that there's a tension between podcasters calling themselves socialists and needing to earn a living that lends itself to the grifter tag? Do you think the online left secretly believes the myth that socialists should be poor? Socialism means poverty, and poverty is noble?
Yep.
Well, that was easy.
Yes, I believe that wholeheartedly. Why that is, I don't know, but you can say that about a lot of things.
Yeah.
And I think it has less to do with just poor and a certain amount of success. And I think that also has to do with what you think is yours and what you think is the world's. Again, I'll use a music analogy. I'm sorry if you guys don't like them, but again, there's not books behind me. These are tour posters. You want books? Talk to Pascal. I remember as a young person when the Black Album came out from Metallica. And I remember people getting mad at the success of that record, and a lot of people saying that the band had sold out. Sonically, it did sound a little different, but it was an improvement sonically on the previous record, right? Where they literally mixed the bass out of existence. And the songs were more friendly to the radio, which was kind of making a pivot at the time to what was going to be popular. And this is a band that had never been on the radio. They were with the major label, but they had never done a video until like the record before they did one video. They had like massive success. And people were saying that there were sellouts because now that success was very, very obvious. The music was catching on to a whole new audience as they had more and more videos and more radio airplay. And the people that you didn't think were cool with the Cinderella shirts were now rocking the Black Album. It made you look at your love for the band a little differently, because these not cool people were doing it. And it's the same exact thing in this sphere. If you think you're a hardcore socialist because maybe you own the books, maybe you've read the books, and somebody you perceive as a douchebag, Joe Rogan fan yesterday, now digs the thing that you dig, it's uncool. And again, I write about that as well. And is the contemporary left a brand lifestyle? And that's when you have to start looking at the way you view the world. Like, damn, is this kind of some brand lifestyle stuff? So, because shouldn't we be happy? As we started this show talking about someone like Michael Brooks, who was on the ascendancy, if he would have gotten big enough to have a TV show, a network TV show, a cable TV show, but just off the simple YouTube platform, and he was getting real Hollywood money for it, but the message doesn't change, he's still the same cat, will we look at him differently? I don't know. Bill Maher was never one of us. Bill Maher has been Bill Maher his entire life. You don't believe me? Go watch House 2. Go watch his old stand-up. It's on YouTube. You can find it. There's no pivot to Bill Maher. Fame didn't make him change. He never changed. But when these things are so small and insular, it's like, don't you want them to get bigger? Don't you want it to get out to a larger audience? If we want to really have a large left, wouldn't we want to have... Do you remember the drama surrounding when Bernie Sanders went on Joe Rogan?
Oh my God, yeah. I was so ridiculous.
And he was like top three guests after he did it.
I remember playing that on tour. Because no one had heard of Bernie. Well, I mean, people had kind of heard about him, but guys in the band didn't really know him. And we played that interview on tour, and people were like, damn. We played the Bernie and the Cornel West, and they were like, damn. That's what you want, is it not? But for a lot of people, let's be honest, this shit is high art. It's like seeing your lame family member with a Keith Haring doormat that they got from Target. And you're like, oh. That's how a lot of cats view this stuff. Did you want to add to that, Pascal, as Toussaint got kicked out?
I think you're right, man. It's like some people see this as their niche Dungeons and Dragons club as opposed to politics.
Oh, Toussaint's having Wi-Fi problems, poor thing. Someone says, do students still write handwritten essays in school? I don't know. What school is that kid going to? That kid's going to a public school.
I know, right?
Definitely not a charter. Look, let's go into the champagne room. Let's continue this conversation there. I'm sure you guys have a lot to say, a lot to add. I want to hear what you guys have to say. Also, we could play DJ in the champagne room. Pascal couldn't boogie at all in this whole first hour. The champagne room is for Pascal boogies. Can we just admit that? Yep. See, he's getting ready. I wish I could play music, but I can't. Also, let's put this on the screen because, bam, I meant to do this earlier and I forgot. We're still trying to raise money to finish the Kayfabe documentary. On the screen right now is a QR code that'll enable you, if you have the means and feel so inclined, to donate to the project. There are some cool perks that we will be giving to people that do donate, everything from a movie credit to a signed hand screen poster. So we have some great perks. And Tucson's just jumping back in and out the screen. She's got bad Wi-Fi. I don't know what part of New York she's in. We won't say. We don't want to dox her, but her Wi-Fi is always trash. Can you hear us? Why the fuck would she do that? Tucson, you know what? Yeah. Can you hear us? Can you stop touching stuff?
I didn't touch anything.
That's a lie.
Okay, I did.
I know, but you did.
I stopped.
No, you didn't. Because you put the super chat on the screen.
I did. Did you guys read it?
No.
All right. The super chat is from DC Joe Black. Great piece, JM. The politics of outrage. The rage guarantees. Yeah. The politics of outrage. The rage guarantees viewers, subscribers, and money for one's reported side show, etc. Thank you, IG5 on it.
Hey, thank you, DC Joe Black. Appreciate that. DC Joe Black, you sound like a player in DC. Like, if I go to DC, I got to, like, mention your name.
I agree. Does sound like a player.
Oh, I do have to bring this up to Pascal before we go. And, Pascal, you have to give your answer in the champagne room. KRS-One rapping for Eric Adams.
Oh, don't tell me no. Is it a new spin on Black Cop? Black Cop, Black Cop, Black, Black,
he's got
Black.
He's got a whole rap about why Eric Adams needs to be reelected.
You've got to be kidding me.
We're coming for you.
Yep.
Deep end.
Deep end. Yup. Yup. So we'll be trying. I'll look for that. I'll see if I can find the clip. We'll watch it in the champagne room.
You got to talk about that in the champagne room.
You thought it was? I swore I sent it to you this morning. I didn't send it to you this morning.
No.
Oh, maybe I was smart and planned it out. Thank you guys so much for watching the show. Please tune in Saturday morning. I will sadly not be here, but these two beautiful faces will be here. And Jean Bajelan and your favorite troublemaker, Chris Catrone, to poo-poo all over everything good.
Poo-poo.
I'm kidding, Chris. I'm actually really excited to dig into Chris's book. Everybody in TIR land, even people that are critical of Chris, said that the book is very good. I wouldn't doubt that.
It's got a great title.
I know.
I'm intrigued.
Well,
I'll watch the show.
You know, I'm going to read it anyway, even though I'm not going to be on the show. I'm going to read it anyway. Thank you guys for hanging out with us. This is always a blast. I can't wait to see what you guys have to say or hear what you guys have to say in the champagne room. I can't wait to just ruin Pascal's Thursday. No. With seeing KRS One. Dun 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 dun.
The KRS One is over.
Is the bridge officially over for black people over 45? Dun 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 dun. Dun.
I want to see it. I want to see it.
All right, guys, let's get ready. And we are
out
celebrating my birthday.
Oh, shit.